land and life for free. But you can give them to the birds and bees.
Well, we'll pick Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. She is AV on the board. Angelica Lysenko. We have Mr. Brennan Carnan scouring about the office looking for some sugar for his coffee, but he will be right back. Probably means AV forgot to put Dunkin' Donuts sugar in the basket, but it's all her fault. What do you think, AV? All your fault?
Of course.
That's what producers.
I'll take it on me.
That's what producers do. It's all their fault, and it's all their credit. Anyway, S&P futures down 1650. Dow futures 177. NASDAQ futures down 77. A far different story from the little bit of futures trading was Sunday night and yesterday morning. We're actually up 8 points. And Apple issued a warning, revenue warning regarding the coronavirus and not many sales in China relatively. And Walmart earnings missed. So we'll have a big report on that a little bit later. But as of right now, we just have the market. Spoozer down 16 and taking some of the rest of the world with it. We've got the DAX, all these European markets were up yesterday. They're all down today. And we've got gold flying up 1590. So an interesting morning in the markets. Is a big turnaround from what we were expecting yesterday. Let's put it that way. And interesting that Apple took a day off to announce, but they did. So, Brennan, how are you?
I'm doing well this morning. How are you, Chief?
I'm doing all right. It was a kind of a miserable weekend weather-wise, at least yesterday, mm-hmm. so much for the holiday. But at least it wasn't snow. And we've managed to come this far without a winter storm warning.
You mentioned that this morning. I'm amazed that we're already almost at March. Well, I guess we're not quite at March 1st, but we're getting pretty close to March 1st and pretty much through the winter.
Of course, as usual, like every article you read, there is a trick to that because we actually had one in November before it was winter.
Before winter happened?
So it technically wasn't a winter storm warning.
Yeah, it was a fall storm warning.
A fall winter weather warning or something. We're not sure exactly, but are you a... I did not... Well, let's put it this way. I'm not a big... We used to have Jordan on the show a lot, Jordan Bressler.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a...
He's a big NASCAR guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think...
He does a lot of work with them in sporting events.
Yes. And he also... I guess the... first of all, he's doing the... He was Abbott's big guy for all the worldwide marathons.
Yes, I know.
Which means that the Tokyo one, what's happening there? Do those guys get their money back or what?
No, it looks like, for those who don't know, they canceled the Tokyo Marathon except for the elite runners and the elite wheelchair event racers.
How do you do that?
What do you mean how you do that?
Well,
you just tell everybody else, the other 38,000, sorry, but you're not going to get to run.
Okay.
And the announcement was made a couple of days ago.
So all the airfares, all the...
Everybody is on their own as far as trying to work out with the airlines, if the airlines will give them credit or allow them to change without costs or what have you. Now, I will say that a few years ago, when the New York Marathon had a similar crisis, not because of a virus or anything like that, but because of Hurricane Sandy, things went back and forth, and the New York Marathon, or many of the airlines, allowed people to change. But that was really convoluted because first the marathon in New York canceled the race, then they said it's back on, then on the Thursday before the race it said, nope, sorry, it's off. This time, at least, it looks like Tokyo is saying a couple of weeks in advance that, because the race is March 1st. So they said at the end of last week that the race will be canceled. We will allow the elites who are, because some of the elites are trying to qualify for the Olympic trials in Tokyo. So the couple of
the elites
runners,
can't get sick?
I guess not. That's why they're elite.
Well, how many people are we talking? We're going to have the entire race course.
Less than 200.
So 26 miles in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna cordon all that off for a couple hundred runners.
Yes. Yep. Now, the difference is that with the 38,000 plus who would be in the race, it would be marked off and closed to traffic for probably a total of about 8 hours, about an hour and a half to 2 hours before the race and a six-hour time limit to get through the race. But with the elites, even the slowest of the elite runners will be finished in about 2 hours, 45 minutes, maybe certainly under 3 hours, but say 2 hours, 45 minutes, and the wheelchairs will be done in an hour and a half to an hour, 45 minutes.
It only takes the wheelchair guys that long?
Yeah.
Wow.
They move.
So they're faster than the elite runners.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, they're on wheels. They're,
well, I get that. But I mean,
oftentimes here in Chicago, you'll see the elite wheelchair participants finish in an hour, 20 minutes.
By the way, you just bought a Porsche, didn't you?
No, I did not.
Bill Gates bought himself a Porsche over a Tesla. Elon Musk just called him underwhelming. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So anyway, I am stunned as usual. It is amazing how you think you're at the, you try and be in the middle of the news, you read all you can, and people send you stuff, and you read that, which, you know, you learn stuff you probably never needed to know. You can act me over the feather when you can tell me now that in a race of that magnitude, at that speed, you're allowed to touch the car in front of you.
Oh. I don't know the rules about that, but I think you can. I
was reading about how, you know, obviously a guy who races all the time, what's his word? You get behind somebody, we ride behind somebody.
Tailgating?
No. We try and get in their airflow.
Oh, drafting.
Yeah.
They're drafting. Mm-hmm.
Where drafting is like a very big part of the Tour de France.
Yeah.
But you can't do it at all in any kind of triathlon or anything where people...
That's right. You cannot. It's illegal. You'll get disqualified. Even amateur racers will get disqualified in a triathlon for drafting.
So evidently, you know, obviously it's been a part of racing for a long time.
Yep.
Where you're behind somebody, you know... And then you give it a shot, and you go flying around.
You go slingshotting out of the turn.
Well, but what they allow people to do now, they claim that if you bump with the guy in front of you and actually push him, he goes faster, and so do you. So it's, I don't know how often it's done, but it's not illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy in this big crash yesterday, that's all everybody's talking about. But nobody's talking about the rules; they're just talking about the crash and the fact the guy survived. Of course. The editorialism, when people want to say good stuff for their company or their product, is getting out of hand, right? In my opinion. Again, it's not, nobody asked me. The guy comes out and says he's in serious condition, but the injuries are not life-threatening. Within 30 seconds, the idiot guys and idiot women are, he's okay. that is not what they said. In serious condition, but the injuries are not life-threatening. Does that mean you're okay? Well, where does anybody get that? I mean, anyway, well, so this guy, the guy's leading. The guy comes up behind him, and instead of pushing him, you know, I'll use the term evenly, where his entire front is across the guy's entire back, he nips him on one side, basically shoves him out of the way.
Yeah, clips him, puts him in a different angle.
Well, he whacks into the wall,
mm-hmm.
flies up in the air, he's skidding along, the car's mangled, he gets whacked by the guy behind him, flips up in the air, skids upside down, the car starts on fire, and he goes all the way to the middle, whatever you call the infield,
mm-hmm.
on flame. How the hell is that guy not disqualified? He damn near killed the guy.
He's okay.
But his right front... wax into this guy's left rear.
Mm-hmm.
Basically turned him right around.
Yeah. I don't have an explanation for it. It does not make sense to me.
So the guy he was fighting with, these two guys were behind the guy who had the crash. He was leading.
Mm-hmm.
So the other guy wins, not the guy who nipped him, wins by like, you know, a foot. Almost a photo. So those two guys take 1-2. After shoving the leader, if that doesn't disqualify you, I can't imagine what it. Now, of course, we're gonna have a million people call in and say, "I don't know what the hell I'm talking about," which obviously I don't. But the idea that you could whack it—I never dreamed you could do that.
I didn't know that you could do that. I didn't know that was legal either.
I'm sure it's quote not legal to flip the guy around and damn near kill him, but to touch him, I would think that any time you touch the guy and cause him a problem, that you're disqualified.
That would make sense to me.
But, see there, that's what happens. Now you're an attorney now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we've got the Chinese coronavirus. Total of 72,000 people are confirmed to have had the disease, while 1,868 people have died. Of course, according to Jeff last week, did you happen to listen in on Thursday?
No, I wasn't able to listen to that on Thursday. What did you say?
You probably would like to go listen to that. He and Lou were talking about how they had to pull the magazine from the...
Yeah, I knew about that.
Yeah.
He talked about that on Tuesday.
And he was talking about it. And you know, I am not unhappy at all, really, with Trump kind of raising the stakes on these guys a little bit. I don't know if I like the way he did it, but his instincts. How deep up these people's ass are we? How's that for a term on a Tuesday morning? You know, what is wrong? We have 56,000 foreign students in Illinois, and how much they give to the economy?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So they. We raise the prices of our schools so our kids can't go there. By the way, you don't let them in. And we let all these foreign kids go there. And they were talking about the Chinese students that are here, that there are cells in this country that watch them like a hawk. All their Facebook, all their stuff. Because they still have the parents in China. And if they say anything bad about China or anything like that, even in schoolwork or whatever, it gets back over there. So we essentially allow spy cells here to watch these people just because they're paying full board tuition.
Mm-hmm.
Brendan, are we out of our friggin' mind, or what are we doing? Do we have any idea what we're doing?
Well, do you mean we have any idea of what we're doing by allowing them in the first place?
By just having no common sense or not ever putting things together. What did Lou say at the end? Lenin said that you can always count on the capitalist to sell you the rope with which you'll hang him.
That's good. Well, I don't have an answer for that. I mean, it kind of goes against our moral structure to allow a foreign company to monitor the students who are here. And if they're monitoring Facebook and they're monitoring things that the Chinese or the foreign students are doing here, that seems to go contrary to our belief system.
I would say you are correct. And now we have this. I can't tell whose crooks are bigger sometimes. Theirs or ours. I mean, I'm not talking about the American people, because I think the American people are absolutely, in general, not crooks. But politicians, how are we gonna get from this Huawei thing? Now, we let these guys here. They didn't just start doing this stuff. Let these guys here. Somehow, there's something going on with the technology. It's not just the technology. It must be the patents, too, I'm thinking, Brendan, because I've been told that, by the way. Now, are we going to try and find a way to... Or is our goal here to steal... Now, they're bad people, okay? We don't want them riding on top of our information highway. How does that get from... You know, we're heading to take their patents and give them to somebody else. Now, are we going to auction them, or are we going to give them to the right guys?
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying we give them the right guys.
I think we should give them to the right guys.
Instead of auctioning them here.
But I have another theory that, call me old-fashioned, but, you know, shouldn't we be developing our own 5G network and capabilities to compete?
I think I could be totally all wet on this. Maybe if somebody wants to write in or call in. I think that the Chinese, because they never had a regular telephone infrastructure, essentially, their entire system is wireless.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, except for probably some of the big cities.
Yeah, okay.
So I guess it doesn't surprise me that they probably have at least been even with us in that technology.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they were able to, the people who did it, where's my buddy John Lee when I need him? Because he worked for this company, Ericsson, and it was a big merger. The Finnish company, and is it the Swedish company?
Nokia.
Ericsson and Nokia. Mm-hmm. Then they get together for, not the whole companies, but they put a big chunk together to do all this infrastructure, the towers and all the other stuff, right? Because there's a lot that goes into this. It's not just the phones themselves, obviously.
Right, right.
And I think didn't they essentially put a lot of this together in China? Weren't they the big contractors?
I don't know that.
I don't know about the big S, but they did a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because John was doing some of the... contracting work over there, but there's big competition, and obviously Huawei is whether they've stolen other people's technology, or they've come to kind of the head of the pack over there.
Mm-hmm. But of the world.
Well, but when you're putting in an infrastructure for 1.5 billion people, where there's no landlines to fall back on, I mean, it's a big project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a really big project. I don't think it's akin as to wiring a company like country like we did, because that takes, you know, years and years and years. But I think they're doing something. Mm-hmm. So they come over here, and it appears they got at least some of the patents here. So now what? Some people seem to, it's easier to buy it from them than to do it yourself. Is all 5G the same? I don't even know.
No, it's not. And some of the American companies are not as far advanced with 5G and are having more problems installing 5G than apparently what Huawei is in their standards. That's one of the reasons why the countries in the UK and the UK and EU are going with Huawei instead of United States companies.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I read something this weekend that somebody else's 5G is not necessarily compatible. Is that even possible?
I don't know how compatible they are with the different services, but I think...
First of all, I'm asking you because I don't know. If you don't know, we'll wait for Jeff.
Yeah, but I don't know the answer.
Does 5G relate to a technology?
It's a new generation. It's a new generation which allows for quicker downloading and more precise transfer of information through the networks.
Okay, that part I get. But I'm saying, does it refer to a speed?
Yes, it'll be faster and more precise and more accurate in the transformation of the information.
But anything that is that speed, even if it's done, quote, slightly differently than the other guy, is still considered 5G.
Yeah, the G refers to a generation. If you think about our generation, 20 years or so, the things change. This is the new advancement of technology for cellular phones.
All right, so if Brennan's 5G is developed and so is AVs and I plug them together, it might blow up.
I don't know if they would blow up together, but it means that mine is definitely better than hers right now, and you want mine because I'm more advanced than she is.
I mean, they might, but I was, or I guess I'm saying they may not be the exact same technology. They might not even be compatible.
Right.
They're just the speed.
Yeah, I don't know if they'd blow up, but they probably wouldn't work very well.
Right. So, because I was reading something about people like theirs, and Ericsson or somebody's got another one that's a competing system and nobody likes it as much.
Mm-hmm.
Something along those lines. But when T-Mobile says they've already got 5G, now whose is that?
I don't know if it's theirs or who's designing that. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I wonder if it's Huawei's.
No, it's not Huawei's because they're not allowed into the United States.
Recently. Does the Canada still have the guy's daughter in jail?
You know, I haven't heard anything about her in a long time.
I think she's under house arrest in Vancouver or someplace.
She was the last time I heard, but that was a few months ago. I haven't seen or heard anything.
I think we'd have heard if they'd let her out.
Yeah.
Well, Trump would have been bitching if they did.
Yep.
I would say. But to be honest, as much as I give the man grief, I have to give him some credit when his instincts are, he does seem to know where some of the problems are.
Mm-hmm.
And that other people seem to have let slide. Now, whether they let slide because there was no solution, the thing I will say about him is he will open something up, but until you have a solution, sometimes it's better not to open stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, so I don't know. I don't know where this all lands with China. I mean clearly not as this virus thing. How would you like, how many people, there's like 400 some people on a cruise ship that are, there's two ships, right? One is
docked in Yokohama, Japan.
And one is just wandering around.
Well, one of them just landed docked at Cambodia, and they let the people off. They let over 1,000 people off the ship in Cambodia, and they are going back to their own place. And some of them apparently may now have signs of the coronavirus.
Well, the thing I read last night is 450 people have it, and 189 are asymptomatic. They don't have any symptoms at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they tested them, and they have it.
Right, at least not yet.
That's not good.
No. No, because in fact, one of the stories that I saw was that of the people, of the Americans who were flown back from the ship that was docked in Yokohama, that on the flight back, two or three others were found to be symptomatic on the flight, and they were put into an isolation chamber and then on the flight.
All right, so if you look at things in the opposite direction, right, so you got 450 people on a ship that have essentially the flu, for lack of a better term. Actually, it's not the flu, it's coronavirus. Now, nobody's dead, and half the people don't even know they have it. The symptoms are so weak. And yet we're scared bleepless because of this thing. Is it because it mutated once recently, or...
I think it's because they don't know how viral it truly is, and there's no immunity, and there's no way of treating it. And it can change into something that causes severe respiratory illness and kills people. It's like a super flu, and there's no known antidotes to handle the effects of it.
Well, I think they think it could easily turn into a super flu, but as of now, it's not there yet. I mean, I'm thanking the big guy upstairs for this. I'm not hoping it is, I mean, at all. But I'm just saying, right now, I can sort of see why the markets try to ignore it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's something unique, apparently unique to the Chinese culture, why it seems to be much worse over there than here. I don't know if it's the smoking. I don't know if it's the...
Well, there's also a lot of air pollution over there, a lot more than here.
Is Wuhan as bad as the rest of the places?
I think it is. It's an industrial center, so yes, it has to be at least as bad as places like Beijing.
In any other country that has it, the people, not that it's not contagious, but nobody seems to have died, right?
I think there have been 5 or 6 deaths in countries outside of China.
Okay. I'm surprised that it's crossed over in India and we haven't had some reports from there.
Mm-hmm.
Are we just not getting any or what?
I haven't heard any yet about that. You would think that India would be a country that would be ripe for this to happen. And you'd see a lot more illnesses and reported illnesses and deaths.
All right, well, this morning, the reason why the market's down so much is Apple came out and they're down $10, which isn't a whole hell of a lot since the thing has been up so much. But it's still $10, so I'm going to see how much they're off their high here. I'll check the... It's trading 315.19, so that would... I'll get my trusty chart up on Apple. I have it... topping out and, well, so far anyway. So far the record top tick was 327.85 on the 29th of January. So it's down $12, which isn't, considering the incredible run-up they've had this year. It started the year at, started last year, like what, 148? So it's up 2.5 times, or almost 2.5 times, and now it's come back $12, so it's not exactly, and they have a coronavirus, and we're, this is what Jeff and Lou are going to come back on, and we're going to have to follow up on the nasty stuff he was saying about China, how they grade, I'm skipping around here this morning because I'm still thinking about Thursday's interview, they grade all their citizens, that's why they have all the facial recognition, they want to know where you are, what you're saying, and if you talk out in class, somehow they know about it, and they grade everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where they'd grade me. I don't think I'd be pretty low, because we say stuff here that, you know, I don't think the Chinese would be too happy about if we were in China. Or the U.S. would be here if they heard us. So they have that going on there. They've got the stuff going on here. Now, where does that put, knowing that this is going on, and knowing that you're, let's just say you're making contributions to somebody to make sure that what was the plant where their biggest export was like suicide? Was that Nike? They had to put nets around the building because people were jumping.
I don't know that.
I think it was Nike. Might have been somebody else. But the this is what Carl was, he was talking about on Friday. We're doing is exporting child labor, and,
mm-hmm.
and our companies are right in the middle of this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like you and I look at that and we say that's terrible, but if we're Apple, and we're the people that are benefiting by them putting their finger on their own people and not caring if they live or die, I mean, that's kind of screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how you... In fact, I have this thing here. I'm not a big, a huge proponent of the... we don't have a minute here. We have Joel in a second. But the there's a thing here from Zero Hedge I was listening to and or reading, not listening to. And it says the... It says capitalism inevitably produces inequality in a few participants through energy, creativity, and frequently luck. Do extremely well while the vast majority do okay, and a few do very badly. Since the big winners, now commonly known as the 1%, are vastly outnumbered by the rest of society, they can only keep their exalted position if they convince the other 99% to let them be. If the rich fail to make their case, everyone else will simply vote to expropriate most visible fortunes. Well, I don't think it's going to expropriate. It's probably too big of a term here, but they're talking about we've reached the point, and we did get here once before. We'll save this till later, but where the 1% now has as much of the wealth as the other 99. The only other time we got that was during the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
How did that turn out? Yeah. SP Futures not on 14, NASDAQ Futures on 62. Come back, Club, Mr. Joel and Cannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm tonight with Mr. Brendan Cornan. Geez, AV on the board. SP Futures now only down 14.25. Again, these guys were up 8 yesterday. We had the, you know, it's a holiday. You still have the, Lobex, session. At, I don't know, I think it runs from, I think Sunday night to maybe 10 in the morning, 10:30. We'll figure when that is. But we were actually up 8 and European markets are up, but now it's all kind of turned around. NASDAQ Futures down 61. Dow Futures down 178. As Apple's down, 967, so that's roughly 75 points in the Dow right there. And we've got Walmart missed. They're only down $1.24, so not much missed on earnings missed. The revenue, I think, was okay. Around the rest of the world, again, these guys were all up yesterday. DAX down 106.8%, FTSE down 71. That's a full 1%. CAC around down 29, only half of 1%. Over in Asia, the Nikkei down 329, 1.4%. Shanghai is actually, well, let's call it unchanged. It's up a point. 0.05%. Hang Seng down 429. That's 1.5%. Maybe some of the money that the Chinese government's pouring into the market is holding up the Shanghai. We'll don't know that for sure. Bonds, rates are down a little bit as we could expect. 1.54, which means bonds are up, rates are down. Bund minus 0.41, and the 10-year Japanese minus 0.04. Oil down 97 cents to 51.09. Again, really in this tight range of maybe 50 to 52.5. Brent down 123, 56.44. Natural gas pop up a dime, 193. So obviously this winter blast late in February is costing a little bit of the natural gas market. RBOB 158. Gold, as you might expect, up 410, 1590, inching towards the 1600 number. Silver up 11 cents, 1785. Copper 260, right where it's been forever. AV, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning, friends. Happy Tuesday. Great news. We're almost done with winter. 2 weeks only till first day of spring. And I'm already feeling it in the air. How about you guys?
Well, first day of spring is not till middle of March, right?
Well, March 1st official is already...
Well, you're talking meteorological
spring. We can call it,
meteorological spring. She's getting into this weather thing pretty heavy.
I think so.
Yeah.
We'll be watching you on the TV reports now, giving all the weather reports.
Well, she'd look good on, TV.
Yeah.
Nobody cared what the weather was. They just like, you know, watch her.
Okay, 36 degrees currently in Chicago. Tuesday is expected to be mostly cloudy, except expect sunshine in the afternoon. No rain, no snow expected. The high of the day is 36 degrees and the low is 16. 50 degrees in Phoenix, mostly sunny day. Winds light and variable with the highest 78 and the lowest 52. In traffic, we have a report of a stall in the right lane at Diane Ryan West for Stevenson, which causing delays up to 10 minutes. Also, we are having big delays at Adams West Bound before from West Monroe to Garfield Boulevard. That's all for traffic. Not too much stuff. Let's check what's going to be in an hour. And
so,
Joel.
You rather have her, me. Good morning.
Morning. So what do you think if she did the weather while teaching a yoga class, because she's a yoga teacher?
I think yoga is a little boring. How do you win at yoga?
Have you tried yoga? There's no competition in yoga, by the way. You're not
what? Like, who can hold their breath the longest?
Well, you only compete with yourself.
And you can always beat yourself.
Hey,
no. No. Whatever you want me to do, Chief.
I would, if I did yoga, there would be competition to do anything anybody else could do. Because I couldn't do any of that stuff.
So. And, you know, it's good for you. And I should do it. It's good for stretching because, you know, sometimes when I compete in events, like, I cramp up and everything. So, like, you should do yoga. You should do yoga. But it's just too boring for me.
No, I'm talking about if she did a class with maybe 10 super hot ladies, not me or you, while she was doing the weather. I bet that would be a huge hit.
Well...
They wouldn't want me.
Other ways to work out, like my Peloton, Chief. Did I tell you I bought a Peloton?
You didn't really, did you?
Yeah, I did. Well, I wasn't the primary impetus behind it. My wife, Lisa, who you've never invited on the show, she likes to work out. She likes to swim with me. But, you know, there's a lot of days when she can't get to the pool at 5:36 in the morning. She said, hey, let's go look at a Peloton. I'm like, sure. So we went to the store. They don't make you pay for it up front. We actually had an old bike and an old treadmill in there. We got rid of that. And she's up 5:30, 5:45, using it 3 times a week. I used it a couple times a week as well. It's a good workout.
What was the
guy? I don't know about the stock,
Who's the guy?
Good workout.
Who's the guy in Blue Bloods? He's got the brother.
Who? Tom Selleck?
No. The detective guy. He and his brother. What's their last name? He and a brother are big stars. That was his name. But he bought his wife some smoking hot movie starring, and he bought her a Peloton. And he was getting absolutely annihilated on Twitter. But how could you buy your wife a Peloton? Are you trying to tell her to get in shape or something?
Oh, that was a commercial. That was the commercial was on for Peloton right at the end of the year. Right before
Christmas. They turned to a commercial because all the heat the guy got.
Yeah,
Danny Wahlberg.
Oh, Mark Wahlberg and all those.
Mark Wahlberg.
Oh no, who's one of the brothers and. And Blue Bloods. Is it a Danny?
Danny.
Must be Danny Wahlberg, yeah.
I don't watch that show. I don't watch TV. I just watch sports, Chief. You know that. Hey, congrats. You guys pulled out a nice win against Carolina, even though they're kind of in the dumper.
Well, they're terrible. But I can't get over these, the two most spectacular coaches. Just ask them. Mike Bray and the other guy. What's his name?
Williams.
Those are the two.
Ray Williams?
Could those possibly be the two worst coach teams you've ever seen? It's like playground. They come down. What was with the one guy, the star in North Carolina? He comes down. All he had to do was hang on to the ball for 10 seconds. He wings up some three, like 10 seconds into the clock, and gives the Irish the ball. That's what cost them the game. And the Irish, they'd come down. Whatever play they had, they'd dump the play. I'm sitting there going, these guys, the coaching is horrendous, or the listening is horrendous. One or the other. I mean, I don't know. Just saying.
It's tough. I think Carolina's had a lot of injuries. What have they lost? 6 in a row now.
But did they have some issue with? They lose a couple. They had some problem. They're 3-12 in the conference. When was the last time? They've not had a losing record in the conference since. 62, they were like 500. I mean, 2001, before this guy became coach, they were slightly less than 500, but they haven't been this bad since like 62 or something. They're an elite program.
You had a good game over the weekend.
We lost you for a second.
Oh, okay.
So whatever you said,
Maryland had a good game. Did you see the end of the Maryland-Michigan State game?
Yeah. You guys had a big game too. You guys won.
We're looking good, Chief. Yeah. I told you, man. I hope we can. I hope we don't win too many games so we can fly under the radar right now. We're 8 deep. I'm telling you, Juwan Howard is the real deal, man. He's a great coach, a great ambassador for players to get to the NBA. 8 deep. We bring a 6'9" to 6'10" guy off the bench. I mean, come on. How many teams are equipped to handle that kind of size coming off the bench? Just good plays, easy layups, good defense. I mean, of course, it helps when you're shooting, you're making all your threes. But, man, I'm optimistic. We've been had an up-and-down season, but now I was hoping for Sweet 16. Now I'm hoping for maybe Elite Eight or Final Four.
Well, whoever was doing the color on the Irish game yesterday, and I think he's a scout of some kind for one of the NBA teams, or was. Now he's got this gig. He was saying that the Big Ten is by far the best conference in the country right now and could have as many as 9 to 10 teams in the NCAA.
Crazy.
But he says that there's not one team in there that he thinks is have a shot.
He's going to get a top seed. I know. If you go purely on the record and playing, Maryland looks like our it's going to be the top team in the Big Ten. But, Michigan has 6 games left. And then you got the Big Ten tournament. So it's really hard to make projections here with a lot of basketball to play. Hey, did you guys make it over to the All-Star game?
Oh, God, no. I have no interest.
No interest. I heard. I heard they made it less of a blank show, and it turned out to be a pretty good game.
Well, they pay in. Brendan was probably over in a skybox, were you, Brendan?
It was like what $800 just to get the last row in the upper deck.
Wow. Well, they paid the winning team $100,000, and the losing team members $25,000. So that's a little bit of an incentive. Of course, these guys are nothing but money, but still.
Do they pay them or do they go to a charity? I don't think that the players. Sure,
I think
pay.
It's a charity. I think you're right, man.
Yeah, I think it was like $100,000 and $200,000. The winning team had $200,000 go to their charity and $100,000.
$100,000 a guy to the winner and $25,000 to the loser. So big difference.
Mm-hmm.
To the charity, you're right.
You guys want to talk markets at all?
Yes,
I got about another minute here.
Yes, absolutely. What do you make of this? Is this Apple finally saying something on a holiday that this China's situation is messing their sales up? Are they going to be one of a bunch here or what?
I mean, they're the big dog, you know. As my producer Spencer said, you know, you got a sixth of the world's population quarantined here. It's going to hurt it. But first, Manny, I think that might be a little early with the correction call here. We are down today. I don't think the numbers are really going to be fully reflected until the next quarter. So kind of hang on, hope we hang up here near all-time highs, and then just as you get the warnings, as you get closer to the actual reports for next quarter, maybe that's when it will start showing it. But still relatively close to all-time highs, rebounding off the early morning lows.
Well, they're only down $12 off their high. Oh my God, we have our guys doing some technological stuff here. We're not sure what they're doing.
Okay,
unbelievable. So, what do you think? Are we going to start to turn here, or what? I was reading some of the.
I mean, we'll see what happens today. We'll see if the buy dippers come in. You got your all time closing high from Friday at 33.81. That's only 14 points away. So, next couple days, we overtake that number, get above it, and we'll just go right back and test the highs. But we had the old, you know, Friday high trick, you know, Friday, Monday. But since we had a day off, Friday, Tuesday, let's see if we can take out that all-time closing high at 33.81. They propped them up pretty good on Sunday night and Monday trading. Didn't have enough guts to go short before that 1 p.m. open. But you got an area to keep an eye on, and that's the all-time closing high, 33.80.
All right, bud. Talk to you next week.
All right, go Blue.
AV, we got Kenny?
I'm here.
What's up, man? How are you? We're doing this without we're out of break. We're working right into you, man, because we didn't want to even lose a minute of your time.
Yeah, I'm here waiting. I thought you hung up on me.
Oh, God, no. No, why would we do that? You're the man with all the all the stuff. What where do we even start, Kenny? By the way, you're into this kind of stuff. You're a Florida guy. Since when is it illegal to shove the guy in front of you into the wall and still win the race?
Well, I don't know. I don't think it is legal to do that, is it?
I think these guys are talking about it's okay to nudge the guy in front of you now. I can't believe that at 200 some miles an hour.
I guess. I don't know. It just makes no sense to me, but one way or the other. I don't think the last thing you should do is nudge the guy into a wall at 200 miles an hour. It's ridiculous. Anyway, so what's going on there today? We see the markets are under a little bit of pressure, but, you know, it's interesting because I was listening to your last guest. And who is that? Joe from Benzinger? Is that who that was?
Yep.
Yeah, because I think it's interesting where he said, you know, we're not going to get the fallout here until, you know, probably late March or early April. So he expects the market's going to hang out here until then, and then all of a sudden, then it's gonna correct. I would take the opposite side of that, saying, listen, it's clear now that Apple's made this announcement. Not that anyone should really be surprised, because that's the kind of the underlying theme. And the fact that Apple can't even identify yet what they think the new guidance is going to be should be a little bit concerning to, well, kind of the markets, but should be concerning to a range of industries across the sectors, because that may start to be the story that we hear over the next couple of weeks, is that, you know, this whole virus thing, as it gets worse and worse and China remains mostly closed with 76 million people in quarantine, that, you know, that's going to become more of a story. So I actually think you're going to see the market start to adjust. I think by April, if it's all done correctly, the market will have adjusted already by April, because they're going to start to react to cuts in numbers, cuts in estimates, cuts in S&P earnings for the year, all that stuff. That's stuff that we're going to start to hear now as we move into March, because it's going to be the end of the quarter at March 31st, and that whole earnings season is going to start again in April. So I'd be curious that I think the market's going to correct before then, which I think is the opposite of what, you know, he was saying. So I think anyone that's looking to either trim or rebalance or rethink allocations is going to start to do it now ahead of that news.
What where do people, Kenny? You know, it's not like I'm criticizing, because I'm jealous if they can. And I've never seen you do this. A lot of the people you've sat on desks with on CNBC give you the amazing idea that they're going to get the memo before whatever it is that happens.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's very interesting. You know, that's the kind of the conversation that comes out of that. I'm not sure why people think they are going to get the memo. I think what's interesting is we're all sitting here in the same place, living this, watching it, understanding, you know, the potential impact. Some of us thinking one way, others thinking another way, but that's what makes the market. Some people think the coronavirus isn't going to be a long-term effect. Others think it's going to be worse. Look, Alarion's on TV this morning, you know, and he did say this back in January when the market first sold off. He told people, don't buy the dip, don't buy the dip on a bit, don't buy the dip. And a week later, we're making new highs.
Yep.
And so once again, he's on TV again saying, don't buy the dip, don't buy the dip, don't buy the dip. I think this time there's going to be a little bit more action to it. I think there's a little bit more downside testing before they take them to new highs again. But I'm not really sure why some people think that, you know, they're getting the call before everybody else. I think for a lot of people, it's just their way of trying to justify, you know, kind of what they're saying, how they're saying it, why they're saying it.
Okay, who's the? I shouldn't lob this one at you, but who's? Guy comes in, he's not totally Caucasian, he looks like he might be, that's not the point, I'm trying to describe the guy, he's got a beard not as nice as yours, but he's the head of some company, yeah. Seems like a brilliant dude, he's on maybe once every couple of weeks, and he actually came in and looks like he's half like maybe Lebanese or something like that area, but obviously a brilliant dude, and he actually said one day, we don't have to worry about like recessions and things like that, as long as the central banks have finally figured it out and we're not susceptible to that anymore. God bless it, Kenny. Is this the first time he's through something like this or what? I mean, anybody who's...
Well, that seems, quite honestly, I think that seems contrary to what happens, because a lot of the recessions are actually brought on by the central banks because either rates get, you know, interest rates start to spin out, start to surge, and they need to raise rates to pull it back, which then kind of feeds on itself. And so... I'm not really sure. I wish I would have seen that particular interview, because I'm not sure that that's true at all. Certainly the central banks can control the depth of it. Certainly we saw that as we started to go off the edge in 2009, the way they've controlled it since, and they have controlled it because they've kept rates at near zero and negative in some parts of the world that has fueled this rally. And you and I talk about that, because once this unwind really starts, once they really start to raise rates around the world because, you know, some other event happens and inflation starts to rear its ugly head, that's where you're going to see some real correction in the market. And so, and correction really in the U.S. and global economy. I'm not suggesting you're going to see a recession this year at all, but people are foolish to think that recessions are not part of the economic cycle, right? So you go through them. It's like a wave. So you go through them, some deeper than others. And the central bank certainly plays a role in that in terms of, you know, trying to stop the bleed as much as they can. But, you know, at times have to be very aggressive in order to slow it down.
Kenny, I know you don't have much time, and I don't want to take up much of it with this ridiculous rant I'm going to do here, but the other night weather was lousy, so I dug out Monetary History of the United States and started reading some of it. I mean, I've done that from time to time, but it's a hard read. I mean, it's serious stuff. This is Milton Friedman and Claire Friedland, I think, was the co-author. The whole combination of the 15 years after the Civil War and then the next 15 years after that, and how the growth in the two areas was totally different, and yet the money supply actually was going down in one and up in the other, and prices were actually declining in the period where the growth was the highest. So yeah. why have we lost in one generation this total concept of nominal growth versus real growth? I mean, we don't even talk about it anymore.
You know, well, I hear you, and I'm not sure why we don't, because I think it's certainly a key part of economics. It's a key part of kind of Fed policy. It's a key part of the conversation. But you know, I think there was such a crisis back in 2008, 9, 10, 11, that it kind of changed the narrative a little bit in terms of the role of central banks, the role of the Fed, the role of monetary policy. And so not that that makes it right or wrong, but I think that that event, that great financial crisis, has certainly changed that conversation. Now, whether we go back there or not, I think we should, because I think it's a proper conversation to have. But I think it's going to be tough to get there.
Well, right now, as long as we have the nominal numbers are up enough, we don't care. But if we went to some kind of if you and I were professors somewhere, which means we had a bunch of guys trying to be PhDs that we could order around and do stuff, and do studies. That's why I always wanted to be a professor. I have 15 guys and ladies under me. I could make them do all these studies I didn't want to do. If you took a new recession study and looked at percentage of your population in recession and looked at their income vis-a-vis their expenses year on year, I'm going to say we have almost as many people in recession now as we did in 2008 in terms of whether their real income is lower like two quarters in a row. I mean there's got to be, what percentage of our population is like that? It's got to be a dramatic percentage.
Right. I would imagine it's a dramatic percentage.
I was reading yesterday, I was watching a tape, watching all these basketball games, and the Arizona Cardinals just signed some tackle for $45 million, right? Okay. I'm going to say that 15 years ago, that tackle is making $5 million, maybe, that contract would be, and the median income of the rest of the country was roughly the same as it is now. So he's gone up four times, maybe five.
Yep.
I'm going to say the value of the franchise has gone up five. The value of the tickets have gone up five. And yet your median person is so far away from going to one of those games. He's like the man in the moon.
Yeah, it's more difficult for the average person to go to one of those games.
Right? Yeah.
Whether it's basketball, whether it's baseball, whether it's football, it gets more difficult for the average person to go to one of those games because the prices are skyrocketing.
Well, because the inflation is in certain areas. Last time it was in oil, which immediately got into the rest of the population with food delivery and everything else. And automobiles, the whole bit. So, but this time, it clearly is the 1% inflation.
Yeah.
And medical care. Kenny, if you and I, who would have thought that 25 years ago, that you and I should dump our business because the trading floors would be, and this is when I was still trading, not managing money, it's fine, but the trading floors would be non-existent, and that if you were a executive at a hospital, you'd be making God knows how much. that was a better career path than being a trader, for God's sake. And yet,
we could have had that conversation, and we would have enjoyed having it. But I got to tell you something. I do think at a certain point, even the trading floor opportunity at one point, and there'll be plenty of people that will also agree with this and others that may disagree with it, is that also at one point got way out of line as well, in terms of the conversation, because the pullback has destroyed a lot of jobs because it couldn't support it any longer. A lot of that driven by the changes in technology, which kind of drove that massive structural change in financial services. You're not going to see anything like that happen, certainly in sports and basketball and football, because you're not going to get a computer to replace the human being playing the sport, right?
Well, but the computer, it could have been, yes, the idea of having runners running back and forth for orders. I mean, I get that part.
Right.
I think we do, as much as we, thought that was okay, but the idea that it was done exclusively with four other people with preferred feeds and stuff like that, to where everybody else can't even compete. And one day we may find out that having, three providers of option markets might not be enough. I mean, it didn't have to go that way. It didn't have to go payment for order flow and for the whole rest of the day, a certain group of people gets to trade within the penny, where retail people can't. I mean, New York Stock Exchange has been put out of business by preferencing that, not because they're, I mean, because they ended up becoming pretty efficient themselves. Probably efficient.
Well, they're very, trust me, I know I lived it.
Yeah.
They became very efficient. But, you know, you're right. It is market structure that really needs to have that conversation, whether it's preferencing payment for order flows, you know, the 60 different venues where you can trade Coca-Cola or IBM or GE, which honestly, quite in my opinion, makes no sense because all it does is fracture the marketplace versus making it more secure. I wouldn't mind if you're half a dozen, you know, maybe eight exchanges that were regulated and traded like exchanges, and you get rid of all the other stuff that creates the noise and actually creates all the noise, right? The dark pools and all the venues, which are all owned basically by the five or six big banks, so they're never going anywhere because they get into Washington, you know, they get in bed with both sides of the aisle, they make sure everybody's happy, and they keep it for what it is because those alternative venues are big, big money makers for those guys, and that's right, I think, you know, we could have this whole market structure conversation, if we're really interested in trying to fix market structure.
How about this? I'll be real simple. You can't trade within a penny, and if a customer has the first offer there, he gets traded with first, like he used to be on the floor.
Right. It should be, right?
Right.
That's exactly how it should be. But they've made it in sub pennies where, you know, where everyone else gets it, the wholesales, and the traders all get in front of it, in the middle of it, and create all this noise. And it's interesting, I was visiting with some people yesterday down here, and there was a senior guy probably in his late 70s who just expressed to me his complete frustration that I'm sure a lot of people in this country feel over how he described the U.S. capital markets as casino-like, because he doesn't understand any longer how they trade. He doesn't understand how stocks can move as fast as they do. He doesn't understand why we're trading in sub-decimals. He doesn't understand why, you know, it feels less like an investment exchange and more just like a casino. And I agree with him. I think that's the feeling that a lot of people in this country have, that it's more casino-like. And I tried to have the conversation with him about you got to eliminate that noise. You got to focus on, as a long-term investor, you need to just focus on your plan and you got to eliminate. But he's frustrated and he's right. Because he said, you know, it's frustrating to sit there and watch for no reason. All of a sudden the market's down 300 points and it's up 500 points. I agree.
If you can stay 30 seconds, my parents loved to gamble, right? My whole family were crazy gamblers. And you know what, Kenny? If you're of that ilk, you don't care if the game is inefficient. You just care if it's straight. And I mean, and we used to bring people, we lectured all the time, we'd bring people down to the CBOE floor. Everybody knew that having some good-looking girl or guy, young people, run by you with the order and give it to somebody. But you'd stand behind the trading crowd and they'd get an order for a 10-lot, and somebody would bark the order out, people compete for it. They turn around and they say, we don't care if it's inefficient. It's a straight game. And now people know
it's
efficient.
That's the way the exchange was.
Well, now people know it's probably more efficient, but they also know it's not a straight game.
Well, there you go. Exactly.
I'll
talk to you next
week. Buddy. Take care of yourself. SP Futures down 15. NASDAQ Futures down 61. Come back. We'll have Mr. Brendan Cornan, which we've already had. We also have Mr. Mike Hart. AV on the board, be right back.
Chief, we've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Brennan Cornett, Mr. Mike Hart, AV on the board. SP Futures down 15, NASDAQ Futures down 60. Again, they were up yesterday on the, maybe Mike will know exactly when the Globex section stops on like a holiday like yesterday, but we were up 8 yesterday morning at one point, so we're...
Yeah, I did see that. We were up 8.
Yeah, and we're down a bunch from there, so we have, obviously, Apple has cut their sales estimates based on what's going on in China. I mean, you got... How many million people are under quarantine? We've got 450 people on that one ship that's still... You said it finally docked, Brendan? It was wandering around Cambodia for a while?
Yeah, it docked in Cambodia, and they let the people off and let them go wherever they wanted to go, including mm-hmm. going home.
Now, my question, is the bar open?
Which bar?
The boat. I mean, are they at least bringing out more beer if they need it?
You got to wonder about the supplies because I don't know if they've anticipated being technically at sea for so long. I'm sure they had to resupply the ships, both of them, the one in Cambodia and the one in Yokohama.
Well, they have 100. I read, Mike, I've read something. This was late last night. 189 of the people that tested positive were asymptomatic, did not have any symptoms.
Yeah, it's kind of a scary thing about this virus breaking out is there's no telltale sign beyond like normal influenza virus. So It makes it much more difficult to track, and I think that's why the numbers are coming out different every time. You know, one spin on the news this morning from the CDC was the idea that they're containing it, and it's actually like the numbers are stabilizing, and if they continue along this path, it should be fine. But at the same time, you're seeing, you know, ships that are being docked at sea for a month at a time. So there's kind of a disconnect between how bad this is, or maybe they're taking control of it. But, you know, you got to look at what the market's doing. It doesn't appear that the market's showing a ton of fear behind this, which really surprises me.
Well, nobody's dying here.
The numbers are a small percentage, but higher than the normal flu.
Well, okay, so right now, I'm trying to do this from a market standpoint. Say I'm the market. A lot of people, I'm concerned about demand in China. I'm concerned about the fact that they have $1 billion in dollar-denominated mm-hmm. loans out there that looks to me they're going to have trouble paying, like, next quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know that we are right at the top on debt. We're the only planet in the world, in the universe, if there are other planets, that solve the debt crisis with more debt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, we got that going for us.
Well, you know, I think you look at problems that could arise that may cause, as you were talking to Kenny earlier, may cause a recession. I think that China represents one of the biggest threats towards the U.S. economy. We look back just a few years ago when the Chinese currency went through that whole bout where it was devalued or thought of being devalued, but it had a major effect on the U.S. stock markets. And you got to imagine with, remember the trade war is still going on, along with this coming out, could really have sort of a spillover effect, kind of that idea of globalization or the earth is flat kind of thing.
Don't disagree. I guess my concern is we seem to be on the edge, and we're talking ourselves into this. Where do you suppose... This is the part I know that they, in my mind, my conservative mind, they shouldn't be doing it, but China popped $250 billion into their essentially market
mm-hmm.
system 10 days ago.
Yeah, well, you know, you look at large economies like the U.S., and the U.S. has been doing that, the idea of injecting more funds into the system to keep the system functioning. I think it puts a lot of pressure on other large governments to follow suit. So I think it's almost like a game theory of Federal Reserve banks around the world.
Wow. I don't, you know, you're younger. You're probably right, actually. This whole idea that if somebody else screws up, this is not the way Brendan and I were raised. I mean... So what? The guy on the block could do that. If you jumped off a bridge, would you follow him? I don't know that bad policy has to be contagious.
That's a good point, but I also think when you're talking about the largest economy in the world, it makes it tough for other economies not to compete with that, in my opinion. But I do understand that
not perhaps to compete with it. I don't understand that
for. Other economies, so the fact that there's a ton of capital being flushed into our system, it doesn't artificially pump up our prices, but assets do appreciate in value. So there's a lot of appreciation of our stock market relative. Of course, we see the valuation get pushed into the currency market, but at the same time, for another economy to keep up is kind of what I mean. Keep up with the U.S. economy. The idea of injecting funds seems to be spreading.
Well, how does I tell you what, I just come from sort of a different world, and I'm not saying it's the right world or not, but when I started the trading floor, there were no computers. When you did a spread, you had to write it all down.
Wow.
And you had to put the deltas down on there, so when you went down on the stock moved a buck, you could adjust the price of the options.
Hmm.
This one's a delta of 60, so this option's up 60 cents. The other one, you know, blah, blah, blah. You could do that. I don't see how, Grandma Hart all of a sudden, I like that chief guy. Here's 10 million bucks. I want him to manage it. Well, first of all, she probably couldn't find anybody better. I was up for a shameless plug. However, if I were to put her money in a German bond for 10 years at a negative 0.4%, and then charged her a fee to manage it.
Yeah,
well, I have a feeling a certain Mike Harvey would say, what bleep are you doing, Chief? your pet dog wouldn't do that. So I guess what I have a problem with is how does a really horrible trade, a horrible investment that nobody we know over the age of three would ever do, because some governments are screwing around, how does that become good policy? How do you go from a horse bleep trade mm-hmm. into good policy?
I wouldn't call it necessarily good policy. It's a policy that it worked. It was effective. It got us.
How do you know?
Well, I would say, 10 years later, the economy's doing phenomenal. But you got to look at the idea of real and notional, as you mentioned earlier in the show. So there is a disconnect going on between the real and notional, and I don't know how that's going to catch up other than maybe a market sell-off.
Did you ever hear a joke about the guy in the zoo?
I don't know.
How goofy is this, Brent? Guy walks into the zoo and he sees some dude down there painting all the elephants' toenails pink. And he goes, what the hell are you doing? He says, I'm painting the toenails pink. He goes, why are you doing that? He goes, that's why when they escape and they head toward downtown, we put this certain light out there and we can see where they are. He goes, I've never seen an elephant downtown. He goes, you see how well it's working? How do you take the negative and or take the opposite side on a policy that the federal? I mean, Alan Greenspan, when he left office, graded himself an A. I would have said F minus.
Well, he seemed to step out at the right time.
Well, but I mean, if you look at his time, I mean, he totally misjudged Y2K and poured so much money into the system. There is a reason why the top of the market was in like March of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
It's 5 to 6 months after they poured money into the system, which is almost the exact delay time on monetary policy. When they started pulling it back out, we started going back down. He went from 1% to 4% like how many times? And if you put an overlay of the stock market, every time he did, when he was pouring more money in, we went up. Not that we weren't growing anyway. I'm just saying that the volatility of it, how far we grew versus how much we went down. Yes, should the market have been up higher than when he left when he went in? Yeah, but it had nothing to do with him. I'm talking about the incredible. The market was down. We were doing a Protect Index program from 97 to 2007. Market was down 25% twice in that 10-year period. And it was actually unchanged on the period. Yeah, 1997 and 1998, the market was unchanged. With twice it was down 25%. And both of those times, you could have guessed because of his policy, in retrospect. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, so I don't see what the pouring in. I mean, right now, the Federal Reserve is saying they're going to eat in terms of make up money for 3/4 of Trump's deficit. That's essentially the deal they must have made with him after they waterboarded him or paddled him or something in the Oval Office that night. I mean, so would that be a policy that the three of us would ever think is sustainable? I mean, it gets you through the next election, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But are we going to do this for everybody will tell you, if you do that for 10 years, you're screwed.
Yeah.
but we're going to do it, until November or
you
something.
You look at, wasn't it Greenspan who said, the market's seeing irrational exuberance? And we haven't heard that statement really come out.
But he's the one who caused it.
Well, he may have caused it, but at the same time, he came out and with those words, which they were powerful words. They really stuck or hit a tune with everyone in the country, it seemed like. But there was irrational exuberance in the sense that asset prices were moving much faster than maybe that real growth. So I think now we're seeing, a tremendous amount of irrational exuberance, but that's not really how it's being framed in the market right now.
Well, but is it? I mean, this is the weird part. If you look at, you're going to get nothing from fixed income. If I was talking about your grandmother, then I shouldn't.
Right.
Where exactly do I put her money?
See, that's the tough part, because if you're not getting returns in the capital markets like bonds, then where do you go? The returns are in stocks right now, so the way the asset flows typically work is when the returns are higher in stocks, you see assets flowing out of things like bonds and safer assets into things that are more risky. So right now, it seems that most of the hedge funds out there are most likely sitting long this market.
Well, I think what ends up happening, and this is, I don't know, Brendan, you're the attorney judge here, but you become immune to it. I mean, I don't want to use a Hitler reference, but I will. I mean, if you ever read The Winds of War, everybody thinks that, you know, the guy became chancellor and all of a sudden the next day, everybody's getting loaded on trains and going to a concentration camp. I mean, it's not what happened. It was like 10 years, wasn't it, Brendan, of, okay, we're going to take away people's rights to be a doctor. If they're
Jewish. Yeah, it was a slow process, yeah. Until it became a very fast process. I mean, they didn't start loading the Jews and other dissidents into the trains until I think it was like 39 or 40, yeah. And he took over in 32.
So I mean, it's a what would
it was a progression to get to where he was.
Well, you're talking about Mike. You essentially were saying when the risk-free rate is real low. People mm-hmm. look for other places to put their money.
Yes.
So, because your pricing models basically are no good at the edges, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just because interest rates are zero doesn't make a building throwing off $100,000 a year in income worth, you know, $1 billion. I mean, right? I mean, it's...
Right. You don't see that type of...
But if you multiples. Do put it in the model, it's worth infinite.
Right. Right? Well...
Right? I mean, because you're at the edge. So yes, people... But, I mean... I'm going to say 5 years ago, the risk-free rate is zero, and people say, okay, well, the market's going to go higher because these places are paying dividends. I mean, all three of us would kind of know that, but how much higher? Mm-hmm. It goes to a certain level, and people go, I don't know, these interest rates might start coming the other way. I don't want to pay any more for this company, even though I'm getting 3% here or 4%. But a year later, it seems like, okay, well, we're right back where we were. The Fed's not changing. The stock gets a little higher.
Right. Well, you know, I think there's a certain amount of complacency that comes with a market that seems to be living kind of like a Groundhog Day, where, you know, it's the same type of market action day after day after
yep.
day. Traders are people, and people see the same thing every day. They aren't ready to react to something different.
Well, we had worked with a couple of different places other than PTI for our protected stuff, and this guy has potential client, which I don't think he's going to be a client. Matter of fact, I'd say he won't be. He says, I'm 80 years old. I've got a couple $1 million. This market's never going down. I just want to be full long. I want to be very aggressive. I want to be more, longer than full long. I don't want anybody to talk to me about puts. It's like I haven't had a car accident for 10 years. I don't know why the hell I bought collision insurance.
Yeah.
You know, one of these kind of guys. And I'm going, how old is that? 80. And I'm going, you know, I don't, get thee to Schwab, put yourself in, you know, in a bunch of ETFs or in a couple of other stuff.
Yeah.
Let them be full along with you. I don't want any part of it because that's not appropriate, I don't think.
No, I don't think that's an effective risk management tool whatsoever, just getting yourself long in the market. Remember, if you're long, the market needs to appreciate in value for you to make money. So you need the market to go higher
right.
in order to make money. So that kind of leaves you one directionally. If the market goes down, then just the opposite. So the market appreciates over time, 53% of the time it goes up. But we know these averages over time level out. So they're... The idea that you just have a market going one way is not sustainable.
But it creeps on you with time, though. And it's because a lot of my work has been, well, even when, you know, years and years ago, I mean, I would get the lion's share of my business came from a couple essentially retiring, having their 401k and said, hey, how about put an IRA with you? You protect it, blah, blah, blah.
And let me ask you this. From your experience, do people typically look for money management help when volatility is extremely high in the market, or when there's a lot of complacency? Is that when most people seek? Is there a difference? I guess
people look for money management help. It used to be where people who weren't used to managing $1 million on their own,
mm-hmm.
and they only had three or four decisions, in or sometimes 10. The early 401ks, maybe you only had three or four, but say you had 10. So everybody, the number of people seem to be retiring with, if you did that from the time, and Brendan, kick in here if you think I'm wrong, from the time the 401k started, all right, if you made the maximum contributions, and the company helped you a little bit. Even if you were in a, I'm going to say, a regular job, okay, the number by the time you get to be 65 was right about $1 million.
Mm, not bad.
Well, except that is your retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so the deal made, and again, wing something at me, Brendan, the deal with society was, Brendan's dad, my dad, your dad, if you and your mom, or them and their mom, they do minor P's and Q's, you pile out of your work, you've got $1 million. All right, sounds like an awful lot of money, but this is all you got for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You put it in a bank, 3% was the risk-free rate, or you give it to the government, 3%, maybe 3.25%. You're essentially getting $32,000 a year.
Right.
Right, you're going to get 25 from Social Security. All these guys had their houses paid off. All right, so you're talking about $60,000 relatively tax-free,
mm-hmm,
coming in as a retirement, and you got the house paid off, the car paid off, everybody's happy. You can live on that forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pays for a new roof every decade, it pays for a new car every 5 years, and it pays for your expenses. Now, in the meantime, your property taxes are biting you right in the ass,
mm-hmm,
and the risk-free rate is now 1% maybe, if you can find it. Well, we can probably get you 1.5%, but still, you know what I'm saying? I mean, mm-hmm, you're down to where these people are panicking. Not to mention, a lot of their kids had problems with tuition, a lot of everything else. They don't have the clean milk because they've helped other people along the way. So this whole deal, for lack of a better term, that was made with the population, mm-hmm, when you got off of the fixed pensions, is basically screwed up to beat the band. Am I right,
yep,
Brennan?
Yeah.
And so now, people who are 75 and 80, if you go to a FINRA thing or read any of the rules, how conservative you're supposed to be with these people, that does not match what they want at all. If I took everybody I knew, my from all the clients that I have from the different places I have, the people that are over 70, and I said, I got this new thing, these turtle eggs in Zimbabwe, where do you see the return you get to get on these things? Every single one would be in.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. They'll chase a return because they need it.
Right, and it's interesting how something is... Something that is as controllable as the rates have such a massive effect on human behavior.
Well, look at what it's done to junk bond. There's people, I'll bet, with the magazine and everything and the stuff you work on and the lectures you do and the TV and the stuff you do. And I, by the way, it's great work. I love it. If you were to ask people, and the next time you get 80 people in a crowd, ask them how much a junk bond should pay, I'll bet the hands go up and they say 6. You shouldn't touch a junk bond for under 10.
Yeah.
Because the whole idea is 10% of them are going to go out of business. You can cover that at 10. You can't cover it at 6.
Right. And
can't you make up in volume?
Oh, yeah. those are all ethnic jokes. Remember those? We could clean one of those up with whatever nationality you want to disparage if you don't.
But, you know, there's one other thing that you weren't mentioning before, Chief, when you're talking about, like, our parents' generation and when they were saving for retirement. The life expectancy was also a lot different. I mean, the reason that Social Security was originally set at 65 was because it was expected that most people wouldn't live to collect much after 65.
Mm-hmm.
And so the government still came out ahead by the investment in what they did not have to pay out. Now the life expectancy is moving up to 70, 75, 80. The numbers don't quite work with the same set of assumptions.
Interesting.
Well, the people are also healthy. Anybody who's healthy can work till they're 70 now.
Easily. If they want to.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know.
In fact, in many cases, it's expected.
Do you know that there's somebody, you probably do, Mike, do you know there's still somebody getting a check from Civil War
benefits? That's interesting. Well, I'm trying to think how that could work out, but, I mean, I know that, like, I grew up near an Indian reservation, and there's still contracts that go back to the 1700s that are holding up today, so I would imagine there were contracts signed after the Civil War that may have led to payments. I actually don't know. That's a guess.
It's try an 80-something-year-old guy before Viagra having 3 kids with a 20-something-year-old girl. and one of the kids is he was at the 75th anniversary of Gettysburg in person. This guy,
yeah.
And now the daughter is like 98 or something. the interesting part is
where did you find that piece of information?
Somebody one day was talking about people from what war were still getting benefits. So I just Googled it. It pops right up. Just put Civil War benefits being received, and it'll pop right up. This lady's story. But the guy's 80-something, And it's before Viagra. I mean, God love them. And the weird part is that your kids got your benefit when you died. All right, but they never went up. She's still getting $13. So she's getting the check, but how does no CPI attach to that? And she's still alive. She's in Ohio.
God, can you imagine, regardless of what she got at first, at a 2 or 3% compounding rate?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. Brandon, if we, 150 years, well, probably not. It wasn't until he died he got his. So, he didn't die until like 1914 or something. Hmm. There's people. But I mean,
what's amazing is this isn't just a hypothetical. This is a reality. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is when you talk about what is the deal when you get guys like on CNBC and other good guys like Joe Kernel, well, the Fed's telling you have to go further out on the risk curve. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting there going, wait a minute. Mike's dad's 90. I'm not going to go out a risk curve because Joe Kernan tells me to do that.
Right.
I'm just returning him 1.5% when he should be getting 3.5, and risk free rate.
Sure. Well, it's easy to look out on the yield curve and say, well, okay, I'm not getting anything for 2, 5, 10, and even the 30-year bond isn't great. You know, maybe you go out to the ultra bond at that point, and the duration of bond issuance are getting longer and longer.
I will not be here. But we'll have
to. Well, aren't there some 100-year bonds now that are being issued?
Somebody issued them.
100-year bonds, yeah.
Was it companies? Was it government? Was it a company?
It's a company, I think. I'm pretty sure it's a company.
Was it Caterpillar? Or was it?
I'm trying to think. But it's a major company, and they're doing 100-year bonds for sure.
Governments can't do that. Most governments are restricted to 30 or 40-year bonds by law.
Speaking of which, we could do this bet. We'll pick a charity. There's always going to be charities around. We'll each put $100 up. And I will say that if the 100-year bond, whoever put it out there was Caterpillar or whoever it was, somewhere during the 100 years, the thing trades for less than 50 cents on the buck.
At some point.
At some point. And then if I win, we'll take the 200 hours that we're compounding for however many years it takes, and we'll give them some charity.
Okay, we're doing it over the next 10 years. I'm in.
Yeah. Well, no, you're supposed to be on the other side of the bet.
I'll take the other side. I'll take either side.
You know, so all we have to do is get. All we have to do is get.
He's just going
to
come up with a hedge. I'm making a market over here.
He's going to come up with a hedge.
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, there probably is.
Got to lay the risk off somewhere.
There probably is a hedge. But you know, the difference going through both of the inflation things is the small people. Well, I got hurt the last time when I say the small people. My parents never got hurt because you were making 14% in. The money you made in the bank was the real rate of interest plus the inflation,
right?
Which is the way it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
This time the Fed is cutting you out of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're cutting the little guy out of the bounty.
Well, you also had the other part of the equation that living expenses didn't increase at the same rate that they are now. Take primary property taxes. You didn't see a lot of property tax increase exponentially the way they are now.
The stuff that you. The CPI now sort of counts, like gas went up 2-3 times.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. Prices are rising.
Yeah. I'm talking about the 70s. The stuff that we touched, Brendan, went up. Food went up.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of things, because there were a lot of it's oil driven. Even clothes, because a lot of it is polyester.
Well, you probably remember that you could fill up a car, and these were big tanks with big gas tanks for $5-$10.
No tank's bigger than my Suburban, 42 gallons.
Yeah, but but what was gas?
Well,
25 cents a gallon?
Well, my Dynamic 88 had 20. What did your 98, 24?
Yeah, something like that.
See, Russ was had the 88, Brendan had the 98.
Mm-hmm. You
know, his first car was a 98. It shows you where he came from. Just saying.
That was the first new car I ever bought. I had a couple of other cars before that were just pieces of junk.
I didn't buy a new car until 99. I always found really good used ones.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a new pick-me-up. What is a beauty, too. But
the gas at that time, remember, gas was like 25 cents a gallon.
What's the lowest you ever got?
It's amazing.
What's the lowest I ever got?
I think probably like 1971, 72, it was, because it was before the gas shortage.
Oh, yeah.
And gas was 20, 25 cents a gallon.
I think I got...
Maybe even less than that.
I think I got 19.9 one day, like mm-hmm. 71st and Damon. They had some kind of gas war.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, the big sign, gas war, 19.9. But mm-hmm. Literally, when Leave It to Beaver, when Lumpy walked in and got a quarter's worth of the finest, it was like a gallon and a half. But right now, I mean, I think it's affecting a lot. But you'd love to be in one of these areas where, what if you had a baseball team? And it's up, they're up 2.5 to 5 times in 10
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look at the increase in the valuation of the Cubs.
Yeah.
From the Ricketts bought them until now.
Well, one interesting thing, Mike, is when you hear people talk about the wage push inflation, that didn't come till near the end of the inflation cycle,
mm-hmm.
like the last couple of years, because it took the unions a while. They didn't just, the day they saw inflation, bust in and get a new contract and say, we want an inflation clause in
here. Sure. And that's exactly what we're seeing now, because there's a huge time delay between the prices rising and seeing those real wages rise also.
Well, the only people that have gotten, I'm talking about a clause in your contract where you got it automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And when I worked for Pullman, the steel workers, they had gotten that in their contract.
The rate of inflation?
Yeah. So if they, say they were making $12 an hour, the next year they would go to $12.50 plus the rate of inflation. Mm-hmm. But that was my job at Pullman. Every time the inflation went up every quarter, we would go to Amtrak, we would go to the MBTA, we were building cars for them. And I'd say to these guys, here's my calculation.
Mm-hmm.
The inflation was 2% in the quarter. You know, the contract is for $60 million. By the way, it's now, you know, 61.2.
In a way, and that makes good economic sense, in my opinion.
But then we drop down. But my point is, and this is why I guess I'm so hung up on it, is I wasn't included. Because then I'd go to the truck manufacturer, and we'd raise those guys up. Then there was a seat manufacturer, we'd raise those guys up. But then you got down to Brendan's fasteners. Brendan, the fastener business was so competitive, it wasn't in Brendan's contract.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it was in the top, I'm going to say trucks, air conditioners, seats, and I'm going to say that's about it. Maybe the major suppliers of stainless steel. I'm going to say that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So that left an awful lot of people that didn't have it. And that's why I can't stand the thought of it, because it's so uneven. Not to mention, I would do the part about the steel workers, and I was, quote, an executive, even though I was a financial analyst. I wasn't much of an executive. And I'd walk in and I'd say, raises this year are 3 to 5. You're one of our best guys. We're giving you 5. And I'm going, tanks for nothing, like in the movie mm-hmm. Caddyshack, right? When the girl they want to get married. Tanks for nothing. Inflation was 12. You're giving me, everybody else is getting 4. I don't care. You just cut my pay by 7%. You think mm-hmm. you're doing me a favor?
Exactly.
For God's. So my point is, it's never even. And now it's not even either.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's not even to a much higher extent than we've seen in a very long time.
Right.
I would say in the past 100 years, this is the, without a doubt, like the biggest experiment we're seeing play out in real time.
Well, it's the thing that set it all. I don't know if you saw this, Brendan, in 2008. Is the Onion still published, isn't it?
Yes, but it's on life support.
Well,
it's a great,
like most papers.
I didn't know about the Onion until I came to Chicago. That was the first time I was introduced to the Onion. I was about 20 years old, and I've been a reader ever since. I read it online.
Well, there was a big headline in 2008, America desperately seeking another bubble. But when you think about it, if you put the three of us in the Federal Reserve, and it's 2008, and the market's basically in the crapo, prices of houses are down, the first thing we're going to say is, how do we get these prices back up?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to pour money, quote, into the system. But if you read, and I was trying to read some of this the other day, people's rendition of the Great Depression, and Ben Bernanke was supposedly this big expert on it. You know what? I'm going to say, and I love you guys' opinion, I'm going to think all those people were wrong. When I say wrong, Milton Friedman, he said it in class one day, that the real reason for the Depression was not the stock market collapse that led to something, but the Federal Reserve allowed the money supply to drop by 27% in 6 months. And that's going to put anybody into a depression when that happens. Now, I can't argue with him, mm-hmm. but his point was the cure on a big level. He was a professor who was going to get paid no matter what. Was if the Fed could have found a way to put the money supply back in the quote system, mm-hmm. that everybody would have been okay. And I'm not sure that they shouldn't have tried to do better. Although I don't think they had the float. I don't think they had enough bonds or anything out there unless they're going to want to buy people's Model A's. I don't think they could get that kind of cash back in the system. There's nothing to buy.
Right. And that was a tough thing. Really, our only model goes back to, you know, the 1930s, I guess. You know, that was the last time we saw sort of that kind of economic crisis. So in 2008, we were looking back 100 years to say, well, what did they do last time this happened? And then it seems like we did the opposite of what we did last time.
Well, no, they took to heart all those teachings and they poured money into, quote, the system. But I think the same thing happened as would have happened back then. For instance, if Grandma Brendan walked to the bank, door slammed, hit her in the nose, and says, "You're $4,000, you don't have it anymore." It's a balance sheet. It's a rip-off of people's equity. Mm-hmm. Not income, but equity. So I think if you'd have poured it in the system, unless you found a way, which we don't do because there's a moral hazard, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the part where you get into politics. If we would have floated into the banking system, if we could have found a way, which I don't think they could have, but if they did, unless you did something that said, wait a minute, all these people, like Brennan's grandma, we're gonna put a FDIC insurance in, and we're gonna backdate it. We're not only gonna pour the money in the system, but Brennan's grandma lost $4,000. We can't cover it all, but we're gonna put $1,000 back in there. Mm-hmm. We're gonna get the money back to her instead of just pouring it in the system and creating inflation somewhere else, mm-hmm. because somebody else has got the dough. The same thing happened in 2007, 2008. We bailed out the banks with a wash of cash, but we never actually found a way to get the money back to the guy who lost all his equity in his house.
Great point, yes.
But why would you care about something like that?
Well, first of all, people in Washington don't care.
When you keep the banks going, why do you care about the people who lost the money and everyday people?
Well, here's my point, Brandon, and I've said it 100 times, and maybe to bore them. If don't take this wrong, because everybody in this room is pretty good at double entry accounting, you could have done both for the same amount of money, and that's why it's not that the people in Washington ever give a rat's behind about every man. They don't. Once they get elected, you know, one vote, they're a mandate. But the same $40,000 you gave the bank when you bought the mortgage for too high of a price, we could have given Brendan the $40,000 and said, "Send that check to the bank," and cleaned you both out. It's mm-hmm. for the same $40,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part that I will never forgive
them for.
That makes
sense. That does mm-hmm. make sense.
I mean, even if it was 10 or 20, I mean, how many people could have kept their house with even $10,000?
Mm-hmm.
And one thing is for sure, is you watch all the, not individually morons, but group morons, that have, and even the Congress people, that have had all these Fed people in front of them to ask questions. You'll never have a Fed person, even though they've been asked them 100 times, you'll never get them to say how much cents on the dollar they paid for those mortgages. Because I think they paid way more than they were worth. Now, if you're going to do that, so somebody buys a house for $250, it's now worth $175, everything's toast. Mm-hmm. Okay, you either don't help anybody, which I could live with, but the last thing you do is go to the banks and say, let me buy 1,000 of those mortgages and price them at 90 cents on the buck instead of 60. Well, you know, just as well to send everybody a $20,000 check, even people who didn't have a problem, for the same amount of dough, and say, turn around and this check is only good to your bank. And at least give you the $20,000 that you gave to the bank.
Sure.
It counts twice.
So the question becomes, what happens next with the stock market? I mean, we've seen 10 years of massive appreciation. It's on the heels of the Federal Reserve making their move. So as of where it stands right now, it's doing great. On paper, we're doing great. as far as asset appreciation goes. But where does it go from here? Does the market, is it a necessity that the market needs to correct? Or are we in a new era where we see a tremendous growth before any type of...
If you get tremendous growth to where the earnings essentially grow into the price,
right,
then there's no real reason for it to correct. But in my opinion, mm-hmm. I mean, dramatically. I mean, it could be 5%, but not 40. But if all of a sudden the Feds around the world or people just say, I'm not giving the people from Germany my money for less money than I'm, you know, if people just go on a buyer's strike of these bonds, but if the interest rate in Germany goes to even 1% or 1.5%, why am I buying Daimler at 20%? I mean, or
mm-hmm.
I mean, am I going to sit with Caterpillar at a 2.5% dividend when I can get 2.5% from the government? I think not.
Right.
So what happens is you can't help but revalue the whole, whatever you want to call it, the whole interest rate pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, right? I mean, people are in the market because of am I going to wait for Jeff Bezos another decade to get a dividend from the guy?
Yeah, well, and I kind of immediately thought about Amazon when you said, you know, things need to catch up. There needs to be balance sheets still. So Amazon didn't make money for forever, it seemed like, and the valuation was off the chart, and now it's finally catching up. So the numbers are making a little more sense, at least with Amazon.
They're making $24 this year. But I mean, if you were to take in a young Mike and you would have won the lottery in 1977, mm-hmm. and said they're going to give you $1 million in 10 years, you'd almost say, "Why bother?" When the interest rate was 12% or 15, you go, "Wait a minute, that's only worth." It's worth $300,000.
Yeah, that's a good point.
What do you tell them? I mean, you didn't wait for anybody. Cash in hand was now. I'll get a return 10 years from now. So what? I'll wait.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not getting anything in the meantime. I have no cost for waiting.
Right, and the tough thing is you're not getting much of a return. So.
Right, even after. If you look at Amazon, and we're not talking about a company that. It's still they're innovative. Their stuff they're not a fuddy duddy company at all at this point. I don't think,
mm-mm.
but the fact is they've been around a while, right? So I mean there are people that would say in times of even in your lifetime, well, let's see, 20 where are these guys? 21.27 mm-hmm. down $7 this morning. Just by the way, Apple's only down $6 now. Buy the dip in there. so they're 21.27. There are guys that would tell you. God, these bleeps better be making 150 a year and better be sending me a check for 60.
Right.
And you're sitting there going, wait, buddy, this is the new world. That ain't happening. Try to make it 24, they don't send you a nickel. Wait a minute. Why would somebody pay, you know, you would not have done that in 1978. Let's
sure.
put it that way. I mean, right, Brennan? I mean,
right.
I mean, mm-hmm. the question is, why are you doing it now, really, mm-hmm. Is the point. I mean,
because we can.
That's true. Well, and partly I think you got to look at the idea of the gig economy. So the type of employment's changing. And I just bring that up as just a factor of like the changing environment that we're seeing. And, you know, perhaps this is the policy that catches up with the times, but it doesn't appear that way to most of us.
Well, I mean, you have no. You have no alternative. You know, I can wait.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's everybody else giving me? 2%? I mean, you know, it's not. It's certainly not, you know, whatever.
Sure. And then there's also the FOMO, which is the fear of missing out. And you have your next-door neighbor who is invested in Tesla. He just made 200% on his money. You're sitting there with a bond making 2%. You know, there's a fear of missing out. So a lot of assets are getting pushed over to the stock market because no one wants to miss out on the greatest rally of all time.
Well, the rally is there because people are, you know, tramping out of these other areas. We were getting just in PTI. Everybody has a whole mix of clients. You know, I mean, obviously everybody. And we have a mix, and my brother Dan was he's very good at stuff like this. Very good at a lot of things. But we were doing for 6 months, there was when the yield curve was inverted, what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. I think Dan was going to the 6 month T-bill, which you don't mind. You can live with it for 6 months, even if rates change, right? And he was getting people 2.5.
It's not bad.
Which was, you know, and all of a sudden now we're back the other way. Now it's 1.5. And I'm going to say all those people that were putting the money in at 2.5 in the T-bills have found their way into an ETF or someplace. They've said, oh, no, I can't live on 1.5. I could 2.5.
Right, and that
and
makes
I'll
sense.
Put it in the market.
Where's the next logical step?
Yeah.
You go to something diversified like an ETF.
Or a fund or something.
Absolutely.
I mean, because you're not going to go in a bond fund here. I mean, God help you if you go to a bond fund, a 30-year bond fund, when the rates are here. I mean, where can that go?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah, I mean, it's all a question of alternatives. At 2.5, you're willing to live with it. Now, there was a time when you sure wouldn't have, but now you want to live with 2.5 risk-free, but 1.5, you go, maybe I should be in some stock that's paying mm-hmm. 5. Well, the reason why a stock's paying 5 is because, you know, are they that healthy? Are they not that healthy? I mean, but Tesla, there was a guy on News Radio 78, I was listening this weekend, he goes, this company is so ridiculously overpriced. He's talking about if they were something like 35-40% of all car sales in the world 5 years from now, and the stock's still too high.
I believe that. I do believe that. You know, I think part of it is the speculation of where the technology is going to go. But that's a lot of speculation, a lot of dollar bills going into that, I don't know, prediction. But, yeah, no doubt about it. I completely agree.
Remember when eBay was all the rage and was going up every single day?
Mm-hmm.
I went through this had to be, what, 15 years ago? At least. When Meg Whitman was there, and then but you could never short it because all it did was go up. I did some, wasn't it only like $1 a trade back then when they first came out? You sold something, it was like $1 or $1.50 or $2, or it was really cheap.
Mm-hmm.
But I went through, it, by some back of the envelope calculations, every man, woman, and child in the country would have had to do like 2 trades a day for them to make, you know, if the stock was trading, say, 150, for them to make $15 a share and send you a check for 7.
Sure. And, you know, I think in all of this, it's important not to lose sight of the fact that the balance of risk-reward still is a balance. So the market's fair. The market's a fair market, even if the market can stay irrational longer than you can remain solvent. But it's a fair market, meaning you know, if you don't like where the prices are because you think everything's too high, the market's fair in the sense that you're allowed to sell it and you're allowed to get short the market
right.
At any point. It's been a very hard thing to be short the market. Now, granted, you could have been doing it with short calls, and, you know, I've done some back studies on how just the short call strategy worked in this market. And surprisingly, it did not too bad, relatively speaking. You would think it'd be the worst trade ever, but the way the risk was priced to the upside, it actually sort of balanced out. You didn't come out very positive.
Okay, but define the market.
S&P 500.
Okay, but if you look at the stocks that have caused almost all the movement,
25 stocks have caused about 25, represent about 25% of the index right now. Google, Amazon, Apple, Facebook.
Yeah, but if you were
Microsoft,
if you would have sold some out of the money calls in the Apple or those places,
oh, you're definitely you're doing everything because you're instantly, the way it works is if you sell something, say, at a 60 delta. Not a 60 delta. Say you sold it at like a 30 delta, which is a half standard deviation. You're out of the money. So the option is only made up of extrinsic value. If you sold it, you can only make what you sold it for. It's priced fairly in the sense that when we look at where it's gone and how the results come in, you come out slightly positive doing that.
Well, you're doing a... But the last year, since since I know this because, well, you guys know it too, but because I've got people that, if you pick the QQQs, they're up huge because all those stocks are in there, right? If you pick the S&P, I think you guys, Brendan, I think you might have kicked his mic out. if you pick the S&P, you did pretty darn good. If you pick the Russell, you're up a little bit, just a little bit. God help you if you pick the XLE, the oil stocks.
Yeah, and I mean, the oil stocks have been just really decimated over the past 2 years. You look at the bigger ETFs like XOP, OIH, XLE, yeah, they have underperformed to a massive extent. It makes you wonder what the future of fossil fuel has. You can't imagine a scenario where fossil fuels get eliminated anytime soon. So you've got to expect that. I would say you see higher prices in energy at some point.
I like your term underperformer. Everything's, quote, the market is up 20%. If you look at the XLE last February, year ago, it was 67, and now it's 54. I'd say that's underperformed.
Yeah.
It's not like 20%, for God's sake. That's whack, 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 huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And oil services are doing even worse.
Really?
Yeah. XOP or OIH, you can see those ETFs, heavily traded ETFs, highly liquid, easy to get in and out, great for oil exposure. I don't recommend USO for exposure because, remember, USO is a fund that is made up of future contracts. So you're always paying for if there is contango in the curve, meaning the prices are more expensive in the future, what happens is the fund needs to roll out of those front month contracts. So they effectively are selling it for a lower price and then buying the next month at a higher price. We call that the spread or the cost of carry. And so USO doesn't really see historically any appreciation to a great extent. Probably more information than you needed for the oil market.
You should come out more often and take my spot because you say things so much nicer. that whole contract, the people who put it out should be in jail. USO. It came out.
Agreed. I mean, maybe not in jail, but you look at UNG, that's natural gas, USO, crude oil. When you look at the structure of the funds, you're effectively, for me, I would only trade it on a short-term basis. So if you're speculating on the short-term price of crude oil or the short-term price of natural gas, I think they're excellent vehicles. But if you're speculating on an appreciation in the oil industry, that's when you need to actually focus on the particular sectors and move into companies that are involved in the oil industry. I think the greatest appreciation lies in things like OIH, XOP, XLE.
Well, Schlumberger is down about 60% from its top.
Right. And the reason why I say the ETFs, I just feel like there's too much single stock risk out there right now to make a heavy bet on any one oil company. Now, the big ones you're okay in, I would say. But the littler ones or the guys, Schlumberger's on the fringes. But I'd say Schlumberger's a massive company.
Or the third biggest company in the XLE.
Still not as big as, you know, ExxonMobil, BP.
Or Chevron.
Yeah, or Chevron.
Well, you mentioned about the USO. Just there's two types of, I guess there's a million kinds of ETFs. But by and large, I group them into two parts. One is either the cash is in the bank. In other words, the SPY, all the stocks that are in the SPY is in a vault at State Street Bank, correct? And the same way with the Russell and these things. So when you're buying a stock, you're going to get your share of all those stocks that are actually there.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get the dividends. You're going to get the stuff. Same way with the...
It makes economic sense.
Right. Same thing with the GLD. You're buying... If everybody buys GLD, those guys are going out and buying gold and making a deposit. Correct?
That's correct. It's held physically.
It's held physically. So is the SOV. Mm-hmm. Now, the USO is an oil futures contract, ETF, but they don't have any oil. They do the...
Right. And it comes down to, you know, how do you store the oil? It becomes a very expensive proposition compared to something as clean cut as the futures market.
Well, when the USO came out, I'm going to say, this is out of memory, the price of oil was about $67 a barrel. And USO came out at $67 a barrel. Now the price of oil is 51 and USO is 10.
Right. Right, and that's because of that cost to carry.
Right, because
every month you're, and the oil curve, about 85% of the time, we're kind of stuck in a contango range. That being said, we have seen backwardation. That's where prices are higher in the front month and lower in the back month. We have seen periods of that in the oils in the past 10 years that have kind of stuck around for almost a year at a time.
Well, you also have, no matter what, even if there's no, if everything's priced perfectly, you still have to actually do a trade. So I'm going to say that the people who do those rolls every month are not kind to these people.
Absolutely not. I mean, I completely agree. I traded oil professionally for a long time, and it was always towards the rollover time would be, without a doubt, our most active period because the spreads get a little wider, and you're able to sort of pick things off on the edges.
The one of the crowds on the CBOE floor, every crowd had a little bit of a different a taste to it, Brendan and Mike. And when I say taste, because they had a little bit of different order flow.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the guys, Bob Tobin, he loved to trade reversals and conversions, which essentially for every stock you have, I used to be able to do this. If you give me the stock price, you tell me what the dividend is, you tell me what the interest rate is, all you have to do is give me the price of the call or the put, and I'll tell you where the other one is.
Yeah, absolutely, put call parity. Yep.
And that's how people manufacture stock, synthetic stock or synthetic put. But one of the guys wanted to trade reversals conversions. Well, an awful lot of stocks on the floor traded a boatload of call options but didn't trade very many puts. There was only a few stocks that had a healthy put flow, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
So he ended up going to trade in Hewlett-Packard, which at the time, other than IBM and a couple other stocks, had a higher percentage, still nowhere near as many puts as call traded, but say half as many.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the crowds were like 10%. But now, in telephone, the interesting part about that crowd is a lot of the telephone stock, because telephone was one of the most widely held stocks around. By the way, if they ask you an interesting question here for a second, I'll get to it. Was an awful lot of covered writers in telephone. So every month, say PTI had...
It's a safe strategy, yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Relatively sweet. I mean, you're long the stock and you're selling a call.
You've already determined that you're comfortable for the risk of the stock, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I got questions for you for next time. But what I was saying is that there's going to come in and buy the roll where you buy the one you're short and sell the next 3 months out. So the guys in telephone would realize those rolls were coming and they would try and get the other side of it.
That makes sense.
So whenever guys came in to buy the near term and sell the out term, they were essentially closing their position for a profit. So they would build the other side of the position.
And that is that is the right way to trade.
Yes.
Absolutely. And those are the people who are getting ahead, the people who are trading it in that fashion.
Right, because these rolls were huge. I mean, thousands of times.
So oh, yeah.
You just didn't want that position, right? You'd like to have it be a closing for you if you could. Anyway, S&P Futures down 13.25. Apple is only down 6.90 now. It was down 11 when we came in, so that's a big part of the Dow. NASDAQ Futures down 49. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, AV. I'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.